The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, and it's possible, very easy, and possible here in the West to receive mindfulness instructions cold. Meaning that without any preparation of any kind, you can come to IMC or go other places and get some teachings on mindfulness. And it's many people find it very beneficial and helpful in their lives to do that. Traditionally, in Theravadan Buddhism, mindfulness isn't something that's offered by itself, but it's offered together with a variety of things which are considered foundation for it. And one of the important foundations for mindfulness is ethics, is your ethical behavior. And that mindfulness is built upon being careful with your behavior. And the simplest way of talking about it often is talking about the precepts. And that the precepts are not a requirement or not a puritanical thing, but the precepts are seen as being a foundation, a support for being able to do the practice of mindfulness. And so then some care is given, sometimes before you even learn to do mindfulness, to look at your behavior, how you, and see if there's some way that you can align your behavior more with the five precepts if you're a layperson. And so the five precepts are usually the first one's translated as not to kill, which is probably just fine, but the literal translation would be not to hit anything that breathes. So not to harm anything that's breathing. And so, you know, where exactly the line is between breathing, I think the idea is breathing with lungs. The plants, I guess, breathe, they say. Because of the, but not to harm. So it's a little bit higher order than not to kill, I think. It's more inclusive. And then not to take what's not given. It's different than not to steal. A little bit different in that unless it's offered, clearly offered, you don't take it, even though it's not necessarily stealing. And then not to engage in sexual misconduct, which another way to connect it to the first one, which is the first one, not to harm, is kind of like the basic principle for the precepts, is not to engage in sexual conduct that causes any harm towards anybody, for the parties involved directly and the parties involved indirectly. And then not to be involved in false speech. So perhaps false speech is a little bit broader than just not to lie. Maybe not. And then the last one is not to intoxicate the mind, not to be involved in altering your mind, mind state, intoxicating it that way. And so there's I think, a really wonderful mutuality between aligning yourself, living by these five precepts, and being mindful. And because there's a few things. One is that generally, if people are going to break the precepts, violate some of these, generally they do it with a lot of mindlessness. Generally, there's something you're not paying attention to. And one of the things is often the mindless of is the impact of your behavior. Sometimes it's mindless of who the people are involved that you're affecting. You don't realize if you really took in how you're hurting someone, how you're betraying someone, and really understood that, then, probably you wouldn't violate the precepts. So there's usually some mindlessness involved with violating the precepts. And so if you want to live by the precepts, then you're more likely not going to be mindless in that way. One of the ways of the precepts have a mutual relationship with mindfulness practice is that because you have a limitation on what you can do now, that limitation becomes a mirror to help you see yourself better. If you have no restrictions on your life, if you have no precepts at all, and it's you can just kind of happily act on every impulse that you have, then you don't really get to see yourself. Sometimes if you have unfettered ability to do something, you don't really see what's motivating you to do it, or what the beliefs and attachments are that are involved. You can be very, very attached to something, and because it's easy to fulfill the what you're attached to, you don't see that you're attached. But if you can't fulfill your attachment, then the frustration shows you, oh wow, well, I didn't realize I was so attached. And so it can be as simple, I know simple, but I'm sure none of you are attached to your computers, your internet. And if you do have computers and access to internet, I mean, that's just as easy as breathing these days. And I'm sure it's just ordinary part of life, and you're not attached at all, I'm sure. But have electricity go out for 3 days, or the internet go down for 3 days, or your computer go down, you can probably feel, that the frustration, that kind of like the momentum, the desire, the wanting that's there. So part of the function of the precepts is to create a limitation, an unfettered ability to do whatever you want to do. And so you find yourself, oh, I'm about to lie, I'm about to exaggerate, I'm about to, not say the truth in some way or other. I'm about to take a pencil from work. No one's offered the pencil, but I'm about to take the pencil from work. And so you have this precept, or a mosquito comes into your house. you could easily just squash it and be finished with the mosquitoes in your house. Or, because of the precept to not to kill, I can't do that. I can't just swat the mosquito. And so that not inability to swat the mosquito because of this restriction, in a sense, this limitation, then becomes an opportunity to look at what motivates. What's going on for you that you want to kill the mosquito? Is it fear? Is it disgust? Is it annoyance? Is it, what's going on there for you? Impatience with, other approaches where you would carefully catch it in a net and take it outside. I used to go around and catch the mosquitoes in the cup of my hands, and I'd go and catch them inside my two cupped hands, and then I'd ask someone to open the door, and I'd go and release them outside because I didn't want to kill them. Or, the pencil at work. No one's offered you the pencil. So what's motivating you to take the pencil? And, is it really innocent? Or what are the feelings, the motivations, the sense of self that are going on? Because, you're not going to take what's not given. Or you find yourself wanting to exaggerate. It can be as simple as telling someone, I ate at the best Thai restaurant in the world. This is the best Thai restaurant, It's a kind of a ritual way of saying, colloquial way of saying, it was really great. But it is an exaggeration. And it can't possibly be, is it true? What kind of statement is it? So if you have this precept not to lie, it becomes a reminder, let me be more careful in my speech, and what's motivating me to exaggerate about the restaurant I ate at? And I've known in myself, sometimes I've exaggerated, not because I thought they needed to know that this was the best restaurant ever, but rather because by saying that I ate the best restaurant, it's kind of a little bit of advertising myself. Look at me. I had this great experience. I was able to choose the best restaurant. I know something that you don't know, And so it wasn't so innocent, I have to look at what's going on. And so the precepts operate as a mirror that become interesting when you're going to step across that, when you're going to transgress against the precepts. It isn't necessarily that you're now a bad person, but it becomes an opportunity for you to look at yourself more deeply. And if you look at yourself more deeply, chances are you will see that it's not in your best interest to behave in those ways, that you're losing touch with some inner sense of peace, well-being, freedom, compassion, something that's actually quite valuable. The mutuality of mindfulness and precepts also works the other way, and that is, as people do mindfulness meditation practice, and feel better about themselves, feel a certain depth of peace, of well-being, of love, of compassion, when they don't feel no longer caught by things, then it becomes that becomes a reference point for not wanting to give that up. And so then that's another way in which then, you have this deeper appreciation for another way of living that the precepts would harm if you acted on the precepts. Generally, when people break the precepts, they're not so peaceful. They're not so settled in themselves. It's much more easy to violate the precepts when we're stressed out, when we're caught up and we're angry and filled with greed or something. When those things are not there and you feel better about yourself, then I think that that becomes a support, easier support to live ethically. In fact, at some point, it said that someone who is deeply mature in their practice doesn't need the precepts anymore. Not because they can now do whatever they want, you know, and harm people, but they don't need them because there's no inclination to do those things because of the deep sense of inner contentment, well-being, peace that they feel. And then the other kind of direction, the mutuality from precepts to mindfulness, is that generally, if a person is ethical, the unethical behavior tends to promote agitation. And so, you know, if you're agitated, it's harder to be mindful and to be settled for the mindfulness practice. And so to live by the precepts is a protection and a support for the practice of mindfulness, for the practice of peace, for the practice of freedom. And the practice of mindfulness is a support for the precepts. The two go hand in hand. And so from a Buddhist point of view, classically, a person would be equally interested in both. And as they go into their life and try to bring mindfulness into their life, you know, people ask, how do I integrate? How do I bring mindfulness into my life? One way to do that is to have a heightened interest in ethics and ethical behavior. I'm confident that all of you are conventionally quite ethical. And so the opportunity then is not to, is to be more subtle or more nuanced in how you understand the precepts, how you apply them in your life. Not in a moralistic way, puritanical way, judgmental way, not even in an obligatory way, but as a way that will support you in your practice, in your life. So those are my thoughts.